So a couple of weeks ago, I was speaking to a friend of mine, Steve, who's had a pretty impressive career so far in software. So he started out his working life in a company called Yammer, who were later acquired by Microsoft. And since then, he's been helping enterprise organizations adopt software. So essentially what that means is, say Office 365 bring out a whole suite of software, then there's tons of value in there. But the reality is it's really difficult to actually get organizations to use that value to understand how it applies to their organization. So what Steve does, what Steve did directly for Microsoft, and now he's doing with his own new business, Changing Social, is helping businesses to adopt Microsoft Office 365 and really make the most out of what it's got to offer to make their businesses run more effectively. Now, we were having this conversation and it suddenly occurred to me there's a hell of a lot of crossover from what Steve does in enterprise and into Viral by Design. Because essentially, as you'll hear as you listen on, Steve's job is to go in and find ways not only to figure out how the software is going to be most impactful, but also get people who are potentially stuck in their ways, who potentially just want to come along and get their work done the way they've been doing for years through all levels of the organization and find a way to actually engage them to use this new software and to adopt new ways of working. So the really interesting psychology is that it's super similar trying to get people within an organization to start using new software as it is to get new customers to start using new software. And as you'll hear as you listen on, actually getting people to use your stuff, whether it's software, whether it's a product, whether it's keeping them retained onto a subscription, is the absolute most crucial thing to sustaining your business and helping it grow exponentially. So if you've got a software business and you're trying to get people to adopt your software, to use it more so that you can potentially tier them up into new rungs, if you're trying to build a community around your product, which is a really incredibly powerful thing to do for any business or product, or if you're just trying to get people to engage with your business more, then this episode is going to be really insightful for you.
Welcome to the Viral by Design podcast with Dave Rotherow, where we get inside the minds of today's leading viral marketers as they reveal the exact strategies they use to build brands, products, and campaigns that are magnetic to customers, spread like wildfire, and seize the attention of millions. This is Viral by Design.
So Steve, how was it you actually got started out working with enterprise social media software and actually getting people to use it?
Yeah, it's a bit of an interesting one actually, Dave. So when I was at school, I decided actually, you know, I didn't really want to go to university. So I applied for a job with a chap from the Dragon's Den.
Which Dragon?
It was actually a company called Umbrolli. So it was with a chap that was on the Dragon's Den, and he basically applied for funding. He got the funding. And so, you know, it was a bit of an interesting process. He basically said, look, I sent him an email after seeing him on the Dragon's Den, and he said, look, you're too young, you live in Bristol and you've got no sales experience, so no. So I went through an interview process, had an interview. You know, I said, look, I'll move to London. I'm not after a senior sales director job, and you know, don't be ageist. And the guy offered me a job. I was super happy. I moved from Bristol down to London. And then on my first day of work, you know, rocked up to the office, had the biggest Windsor knot on my tie. And I was waiting outside the office and he never showed up. So basically the company went into liquidation and the guy didn't tell me. So I then ended up falling into recruitment, as most people do, and started working in recruitment, and it was about sort of 2008 at this time, and you know, we're going through the credit crunch, and I was lucky because I had a, you know, pretty supportive boss, you know, quite a visionary one, and he basically said, look, take a week off, go and do some research, find out where you want to focus, because things aren't going to get, you know, they're not going to be easy. And I ended up finding a company called Salesforce.com, which was a SaaS type of business. The reason I chose CRM was because of, you know, in recessions, you need to look after your customers, and 80% of your revenue comes from those 20% of your customers, just through like Pareto's law. And so that's really why I focused on CRM software. And as I was recruiting, and it was quite an early sort of time, and I was recruiting for Salesforce.com, and I really loved what they were doing. You know, it was all cloud software. It was really the future. And I applied to work for them, and they said, look, you need to go to university if you want to work for us. So I ended up going to Durham. I studied business, management and finance. And then when I got to Durham, I messaged them and said, hey, can I get an internship? And they said, we don't do internships. I'm like, oh my goodness, what more do I have to do to work for you guys? And I just said, look, can I do work experience? And they said, yeah. So did an unpaid work internship with Salesforce. And then in my first year of university, second year of university, I went back and that was paid. I was then doing my research and my dissertation and thinking about ideas. And I was going to do it on something quite boring, like ERP systems, like enterprise resource planning. And the guy basically said to me, the person I was working for, he just said, look, that's so unbelievably boring.
And he's honest.
Yeah, he was honest. And, you know, in hindsight, it kind of was pretty boring. And he said, look, that's not sexy. Enterprise social networks are sexy. That's the future. And so I didn't really know what enterprise social networks were. And I started doing my research and started, you know, working on my dissertation. And I found this little startup company called Yammer. And, you know, it was just quite amazing. The people that they had, the vision that they had for enterprise social software, you know, effectively taking principles from Facebook and making the organization a much more connected place for collaboration and employee engagement. And I just saw that as a future. And that's really how I got into it. I basically completed my dissertation. I then handed a copy of my research down to the guys at Yammer. And I was so fortunate, but they handed me a job contract off the back of my research. And that's how I really got into Yammer. That was really the starting point.
That's amazing. So you wrote your dissertation on them and they were so impressed that basically they took you on.
Kind of, yeah.
That's pretty great. So in terms of corporate environments, I guess a lot of people are kind of stuck in their ways. Like they just like to turn up and they're used to their routines and they just want to get the job done and then go home and carry on with their life and do, you know, their own personal life separate. So from our conversations, what you do is you go in and try and get people to change the dynamics inside organizations, which involves getting them to do new things and use new software, most importantly, which is where a lot of the crossover with what we're talking about comes. So how do you go in and actually break these patterns and get people to use new software, to change the way they work and to become more productive?
Sure. So I think that there's this kind of buzzword at the moment called adoption. And adoption is, you know, the acceptance of new ways of working or the acceptance of something new, like a process, a technology, you know, those kind of things. And what we try and do is we try to get people to adopt new ways of working or adopt those technologies through a process of change management. So one of the ways in which we do that at Changing Social is try to create awareness. But in order for you to create awareness of these new ways of working, you kind of need to understand what's in it for me from an employee's perspective. Once we can understand what's in it for me from an employee's point of view, then we can try to work on the communications that are going to increase their desire to want to work in a new way. So for example, if we can save someone time, or if we are able to make their work lives easier, then what's not to love about that? So what I try and do is really understand what the user is wanting to do and how we can help them fall in love with new ways of working.
That's really interesting, you know, because there's so much crossover with people like Chip and Dan Heath and Jonah Berger and people who kind of try and break down the concept of virality and why people do things and why people take action and why people share. And one of the key things there is like, what's in it for me? Why, like, how does this actually benefit me?
Mm-hmm.
It's like a really interesting crossover. So that's I guess one of the things, one of the reasons or ways to motivate people to change and become what you refer to as champions within organizations.
Mm-hmm.
So first of all, can you break down the idea of champions and also like how you monetize, how you incentivize these people without, because I guess it's not monetization. It's not like, hey, we'll give you X dollars or X pounds if you do this. How do you actually incentivize these champions?
Sure. So, well, first of all, if we try and understand what is a champion within an organization, you know, these champions, you can call them advocates, you can call them evangelists or whatever. we at Changing Social, we call them digital champions. Digital champions are a group of really engaged employees within organizations that, you know, really buy in and subscribe to the vision and the values of that organization about what it is that they're trying to do as a corporation. So first of all, you basically need to identify who these types of champions are. The problem that businesses have at the moment is that a lot of time digital champions are recruited, but they're kind of voluntold. So they're voluntold by their managers that, oh, you know, hey, Dave, you've got a bit of free time. You're going to be a digital champion. And often that person is kind of like disengaged, or there's a reason they have too much free time. Yeah, maybe they're just not the right person, or they don't buy into it, and they're kind of perhaps unengaged employees. The other problem is that if they're voluntold, then they haven't really bought into that themselves. So what we try to do is identify who is the perfect digital champion. Then what we do is we, again, tailor the communications on, you know, what's in it for me? Why should I join and why should I subscribe to being a digital champion? We then have to outline what time commitments it's going to require from them and what we're going to give them back as well. When we onboard them, we go through, you know, a series of, you know, either training around the product, but also some of the research that I've done around digital champions is actually looking at the softer skills. So not just how do we recruit these digital champions, but how do we make them more effective in what they do? So we actually make sure that we provide training for these digital champions around the softer skills. Again, from the research that we've done, basically that illustrates and the research highlighted that digital champions are most effective when they're able to tell good stories, when they're able to present, and when they can influence others. So the onboarding phase that we take our champions through are not just about understanding the product, but actually how to be more effective in influencing and storytelling and presenting to their team. In terms of getting them to continue to be effective, we need to add in some concepts like badging or gamification, which are effectively non-financial rewards. But again, it just makes people feel good. And, you know, if we're getting someone to do something for us, what are we going to give them? And organizations sometimes don't have money for a digital champions program. Also, there's sort of some implications around tax and what benefits you can give people as well. Like, you know, some organizations, the limit's like £50 or $50. So implementing concepts like gamification really do help.
That's really interesting, you know, because I can see so many crossovers, and this is why I was so excited about our conversation when you started up Changing Social, because there's so many crossovers into like B2C commerce as well. Mm-hmm. And the idea of creating, I guess, what a digital champion in the enterprise world would be like a brand advocate in the B2C kind of commerce world. Yeah, that's really exciting. So obviously you've been involved really heavily in startup software, in Microsoft software, you know software inside out, and you also know how exactly that applies to organizations, how to get people to make the most out of it. And you've got a pretty good head for generally what makes a good piece of software. So in your opinion, broadly, what actually makes it a good piece of software? Is it UX? Is it like, how does that play out for you?
Yeah, UX definitely takes, you know, UX is a huge part of making good software. And I think it's about accessibility as well. And what I mean by accessibility is, how do we make software inclusive for the whole organization? So from a design principle perspective, if we're looking at making software sticky within businesses and within organizations, not necessarily businesses, but, you know, schools or colleges or universities and nonprofit charities and those kind of things, how do we make this technology and how do we make this software inclusive for all of those people that have to operate and use and consume this information and this software? So making it accessible, I think, is so important. And accessibility for me is those people that have, you know, disabilities, whether or not they're seasonal disabilities, whether or not they're temporary disabilities or permanent disabilities. So, you know, those people that are visually impaired or those people that have hearing difficulties, how do we make this technology that they're easy, that those people that have those types of disabilities, how can they consume the information that's in the software? So, you know, for example, people with color blindness, and you're doing charts in different colors through, you know, Windows 10 and some of the accessibility features from Microsoft, we're looking at actually, how do we make the colors stand out more for people that have color blindness? Also, those people that have hearing aids. And if we as an organization are supplying headsets that are really, really uncomfortable for people with hearing aids, how can we expect them to really make the most of this technology and this software? So that's one thing, I think, is making technology inclusive for all people within organizations. I think doing A/B testing and the way that technology is developed and how it's created, I think, is important from a design point of view as well. So there's lots of research. I mean, I know Facebook have research around what makes things sticky. And that's, you know, if for a new user into Facebook, if you request or you have seven friends accept you within 10 days, that basically proves that you're going to be a more engaged user on Facebook rather than those that don't. Likewise, with something like Slack, they say, okay, if you, as a team within Slack and in your Slack channels, you know, if you've got 2,000 posts or 2,000 threaded conversations, then actually that means that they can convert you from premium over to enterprise a lot easier. Similarly with Box and Dropbox, if you, as a new user, if you're uploading a file and you're collaborating on those files within a week, again, the software is going to be much more sticky because you're seeing the value from immediacy, from inception as a new user. So I think when we're looking at this from Microsoft and what I try and do at Changing Social is we try to capture new users and we try to make all of our change management principles accessible for the whole organization so it's as inclusive as possible. So all of our communications are, you know, with alt text or cue text. So if any of our presentations or our communications have images, how can we make that accessible for people that are visually impaired? Likewise, when we're doing presentations and when we're doing workshops, we will check to ascertain whether or not people have those kind of disabilities and then make sure that they've got subtitles in. Again, if English isn't their first language, we can then automatically translate voice into their languages through Microsoft's translation features.
That's really interesting what you said just a second ago about how you can tell quite early on within the first few days if there's a certain amount of engagement that you are going to be able to convert people up to a higher tier, for example, which obviously a lot more in B2C commerce software would be like free trials. Even Slack obviously is like is free trial, and Dropbox as well is the same. So you'd probably say in that case that it's really important to focus on getting engagement in the first very short period of time to actually, if you actually want to get people to upscale and to work up to higher tiers.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, there's no such thing as a perfect environment. So often the types of engagements where we're brought in is, you know, people have had maybe Office 365 for 2 years, you know, due to various different reasons, but haven't deployed it. Maybe it might be they've got legacy technology that there's an overlap, or perhaps they just got a better deal with their licensing, which meant that they would purchase the technology, but they haven't necessarily deployed it or adopted the technology. What we do try to do, absolutely, is make sure that organizations try to capture new employees right from the very beginning and put in place mandatory training and mandatory comms around this is why and this is how it's going to save you time and this is how it's going to make your life easier.
So that's what Changing Social does. It comes in, and even though people might have this software already, they've just not implemented it, you guys actually go in and say, right, here is a plan. Here's how it's going to help your business. Here's how we engage your staff to actually take advantage of it. And even though you've got the software, this is how you're going to like put some rocket fuel into it. Is that right?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we're not on the technical side, so we don't come in and do all the infrastructure and, you know, set things up like that, really. But what we do is we really focus on the people. So understanding who exists within the organization so that we can create compelling communication strategies, so that we can create digital champions programs, and then also train people on what's relevant for them. I think one of the biggest shifts that I've seen over the past 8 years has been that, you know, typically a training session would involve, you know, an IT manager arranging a big seminar training session and just getting, you know, 100 people in a conference hall and then training the hell out of them on Office 365 or, well, enterprise technology. And, you know, it'd be like, oh, how do I switch on my computer, all the way through to, you know, how do I configure my SharePoint site, or, you know, these kind of things. And one of the things that we're seeing is one of the sort of big shifts is a concept around contextual learning and micro videos. So contextual learning is how do we provide training and awareness for users at just the right time. So for example, if you're looking to post a message on something like Yammer or on Microsoft Teams, how can we provide training at just the right time to help people make their posts more effective or post it to the right people? Micro videos as well are very, very short videos. So again, we've seen a shift in the market in terms of here's a 30-minute video on how to do X, Y, and Z. Well, A, B, C, D, E, F, G, all the way through to Z. But with micro videos, what we're trying to do is basically just educate people and give them the ability to perform the actions that we want them to do in less than 30 seconds, because people just don't have the time.
That's interesting. Because, you know, I mean, obviously it's a broadly accepted fact that people's attention spans are getting shorter, but to actually communicate to people relevant information when they need it, like, I think that's a really powerful concept. There's so many crossovers here between what you do, and I guess we really touched on between what you're doing and between B2C commercial social media as well. What kind of crossovers do you see from the corporate world into commercial social media? And the idea of building tribes or champions.
Champions. Yeah, we don't call them champions.
Only in certain organizations. Or building tribes and champions for a B2C brand. How would people go about doing that?
Yeah, so I suppose this goes back to one of the questions you asked earlier about, you know, digital champions and those kind of things. So, you know, we've already covered that, but just to sort of reiterate that point, it's about identifying engaged groups of people that are almost, so if we're looking at the comparisons, I suppose they're your brand advocates. So we're looking for brand advocates within organizations that really buy in and subscribe to the message that, you know, Office 365 or this technology, whatever it is going to make your work life easier. So if we can find those people and make them more effective in what they do, that massively, massively helps. Some of the other principles that we see around that we can adapt from the B2C market into B2B for enterprise software and making things sticky is really, I think, a couple of things. One is around the communications side of things. So how do we make communications much more compelling for end users? Again, we've already just touched on the point that attention spans are decreasing. So, you know, actually having Instagram style videos, I think, are really, really important. Also, the users actually creating their own content for their own teams about how to make things easier or how to use the functionality within software, or like just a really short video on how this software makes my life easier. So it's almost like a crossover between, you know, the Instagram stories and creating your own content as a user, and also like the kind of BuzzFeed-y style titles to grab people's attention. You know, 10 reasons how Yammer is going to change your life, or, you know, 6 things you didn't know about Microsoft Teams, for example. That kind of communication style and tone of voice, I think, really resonates with end users. Also, we have to just consider what is the organization's culture and what is the organization's tone of voice, because sometimes that's not always going to work and you have to follow brand principles and brand guidelines internally. So it can be a bit of a challenge sometimes, but those are kind of the things I'm seeing.
It's really interesting something that you said earlier on before we started recording about the new users coming into organizations and the kind of millennials and Generation X coming into corporate organizations. They've already grown up mm-hmm. around a culture of social media, right? And then your take on that is that if businesses mm-hmm. can start to implement, even if it's just in micro steps, start to implement these social ways of working, then they're kind of helping their new staff into an environment that they're already kind of familiar with, rather than switching to crossing over into a different workflow, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I think there's a little bit of a history lesson here. So if we go back in time and think about technology as a whole, the cost of technology and the cost of technical innovation was so high back in the Industrial Revolution that it was actually really only businesses that could afford new technology like telephones or even the telegram, right? These were technologies that started off in businesses. Email also was used first of all in businesses as well, like research with CERN and, you know, that kind of thing. But
even computers, like people didn't believe that PCs would exist, right? Before
absolutely.
People like Steve Jobs and Bill Gates.
Absolutely, yeah. So all of this technology really, really started within businesses. But because of the cost savings around technology innovation and just, you know, due to Moore's law, where the cost of technology just rapidly decreases, what that really means is that, and from a scale perspective, companies are able to innovate faster for a consumer market. So if we think about something like Facebook, for instance, that was a consumer tool that people understood how it was supposed to be used in their personal lives. But when you're trying to implement something like Yammer, which is an enterprise social network for a business, automatically these employees go, well, I understand how this is supposed to work in my personal life, but in the business, how does this really, really work? Is this just a way of me, you know, keeping up to date with, you know, cat gifts or baby pictures or events, birthdays, that kind of thing? And so it's difficult because we understand how these technologies are used in our personal lives, but not necessarily our business lives. So I think that there's a challenge, a generational challenge, between people that are non-millennials or people that haven't been brought up with this new consumerization of IT. But in the future, we might see that changing. You know, people that have been brought up with in the Snapchat and Instagram generation, you know, what are going to be the adoption challenges or implications for them in the future? And it's really, yeah, really interesting.
Yeah. Point. That is really cool. So you've touched on a few things. In fact, a very broad topic of what change in social does is specifically Office 365 and helping people make the most out of the applications that maybe they don't know exist or maybe they don't know the power of them. So Office 365 being such a huge platform, there's so many different apps, but most people aren't using them to the max. What are some of your favorite apps and why?
Well, maybe I'm a little bit biased because I started my career at the little startup Yammer.
Which was then bought by Microsoft.
Yeah, it was bought. So it started off in 2008 and then it was acquired by Microsoft in 2012. So perhaps I'm a little bit biased, but I really think that Yammer has the opportunity and the potential to be such a transformational technology for businesses. Just purely because, you know, if you think about organizational structures and the corporate environment and all of the silos that exist within those structures, a technology like Yammer, where it breaks down those silos and it has no respect for hierarchy so much, it basically flattens that organization. So someone in a shop floor of a retail environment can directly communicate with the decision makers at the top of the organizational the hierarchy. So I think that when we're looking at the benefits of that, it's around, you know, how do we become more agile as an organization? How can we make faster decisions? How can we engage employees and actually make them feel part of something rather than just working for us and picking up their wage? So I think that Yammer has the real potential to be such a transformational technology, you know, right across business agility, making it more a more collaborative environment and just making it a better place to work. So I think that Yammer's a fantastic tool. We've seen companies, one company that I've seen recently was the wind farm guys called Siemens Gamesa. They're doing some really cool stuff at the moment around green energy. And they, you know, don't use emails internally. Their business processes are built around, you know, Yammer is built around their business processes. So when people are going out on the wind farms in the North Sea and these kind of things, they're not collaborating over email, they're collaborating on Yammer. And again, the visibility of that is you just enable serendipity. So I think that's really, really powerful. Some of the other tools, some of the things that I like, let me think. Power BI is fantastic. You know, over the last...
What does that do? What's Power BI?
Well, Power BI is a data visualization tool. So it's how do we collect data and how do we visualize data to make better and faster decisions in real time? So if we think about data as a whole, we're collecting around sort of 2.5 quintillion bytes of data. You know, over the last 2 years, 90% of data that is stored today was collected within 2 years. Like, that's phenomenal. So if we're collecting so much data, the question is, so what? What do we do with that data? And Power BI actually helps us interpret that data to turn it into insights so that we can make better decisions. So I think Power BI is such a powerful tool for all of the organization.
And is that only really utilizable for big organizations, or like say as an SME, like a 4 or 5 person business, is it realistic to use something like that?
No, I mean, we're working with one of the companies in Bristol, a really cool company called Clifton Coffee. We've just helped them in their digital transformation, but you know, digital transformation is a journey. So we're helping them get to a point where they can actually use data. We're creating dashboards for them around data and how they interpret this data to provide insights. And the insights that we're looking at are, how do we cross-tabulate data from the weather forecast into coffee sales? How can we try to predict what and who wants what coffee when to make the business more agile? We're also looking at and helping them interpret social trends of coffee. So in which parts of the UK, where are they selling different flavors and different styles of roasted coffee? So that's really, really interesting. You know, think of that from a supply chain perspective. If we know that actually in the Northeast, they prefer Colombian coffee versus sort of Kenyan coffee, actually we can streamline our supply chain and make predictions that we can actually, you know, supply or store coffee with a shorter value chain up in the Northeast to supply coffee quicker.
That's really interesting. That's fascinating, you know, because small businesses, I think, often overlook these kind of things, like the
totally
little micro changes. And like being able to actually see that data and use it in a useful way rather than just, as you say, like spreadsheets full of stuff, which doesn't make any sense. That is pretty exciting.
Yeah. And also I think that they, you know, one of the challenges, they came to us and said, look, actually it takes us about 2 to 3 days of doing reporting, you know, and often those reports are done once a month, and it takes them 2 days to go through and file their reports. But actually, if we can turn that data into real time and give them and automate those reports for them, then actually they can make faster decisions. They don't have to wait for a month. The feedback loops are so much shorter, making their business much more agile.
That's fascinating. So what's next for Change in Social? What are you up to now? What sort of people are you working with, and what's your aim? Because you're pretty young, right? 6 months, is it?
Yeah, we've been going 6 months. So, you know, my background's been at Microsoft and those kind of things. But as Changing Social, we're a fairly new company. We're growing fast. We're recruiting. So if anyone's listening that's interested in adoption and change management for the enterprise space, please get in touch. Shameless plug there for recruiting. But yeah, as a business, we're fairly new, but we're growing fast. In terms of what we're doing some pretty innovative stuff. So we're producing board game for Office 365 adoption as well. And that's really designed to help people. It's just one of the ways that we try to be, you know, creative and get our points across in unique ways. And that board game is really around, you know, trying to educate people on what are the change management principles and adding in gamification into that. We're also growing in the US, so we're seeing a lot of traction from all different markets. So we're growing into the US. I think one of the things that we're doing that's really interesting is actually focusing on some of the transformational technologies that are really going to have an impact. So a big focus for us at the moment is around something called Microsoft Teams, which I suppose is, you know, a Slack compete, which if an organization has Office 365 as a license, they get Teams for free, and not many businesses know that. So we're doing a lot of work around Microsoft Teams, and Microsoft Teams really pulls in all of the very best of Office 365 to make a ubiquitous and sort of seamless collaborative environment for organizations. We're doing some work with something called Stream, which is pretty cool. So Microsoft have this thing in the back end called Cognitive Services. And if we're having this conversation, if we were doing this on Teams, Dave, we could have transcribed all of this conversation And then we could have automatically translated this conversation into several different languages at the click of a button.
It's all great.
Yeah. Yeah, don't worry, I can help you with that. And then accessibility. And for me, accessibility is such an important part of what we do and how organizations work. You know, myself, I'm dyslexic, and there are so many features within Office 365 and Windows 10 that not many people know about that are actually designed for people that have dyslexia. So, you know, it's not just spell check, but accessibility features. So it will actually determine, based on the cognitive services and artificial intelligence, actually, hey, Steve, maybe you could have phrased that in a different way, or maybe that there's a different way of explaining what you've just said, which I think is a really, really powerful tool. So accessibility is hugely important and something that I strongly believe in.
That's really exciting. Well, Steve, it's been an absolutely fascinating conversation. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you very much, Dave. Appreciate that.
So really hope you enjoyed that episode, and there were plenty of takeaways for you that you can start to apply to your business. Some really interesting things that stood out there were the concepts of making micro videos, writing really compelling copy, and identifying what actually makes people tick to engage them. This is really, really applicable to any kind of business, whether you're going B2B, whether you're going B2C, whether you're trying to engage people within an organization. What's really interesting as well is that Steve spoke about essentially split testing techniques, which is a huge part of direct response marketing and internet digital marketing, being able to gauge what works and what doesn't and go with the most effective. As ever, you can find more detailed cliff notes and a bit more content on what Steve and I discussed on and off mic by going to viralbydesign.net.
This has been the Viral by Design podcast with Dave Rothero. For more viral marketing secrets and to get detailed cliff notes on all episodes, visit viralbydesign.net.